Edition of Truth Jihad Radio right here on We the People Radio Network. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm your host every weekend, day, Saturdays and Sundays, 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time. And I try to bring you fascinating guests, people who have something to say that needs to be heard but isn't getting heard out in the mainstream media. It isn't penetrating that thick, numbskull mainstream consciousness. But we're working on it. Well, we're going to touch on some different issues today. I'm often talking about the biggest crimes and cover-ups behind the kind of top of the food chain in this corrupt land. Today we'll be talking about some of that, but we'll also be talking about another important subject that I don't think I've ever dealt with on the radio before, and that is the death penalty. As many of you know, I am strongly against the death penalty, so much so that I even oppose the executions of the 9/11 criminals. Not that I'm against Nuremberg-style trials for those guys. In fact, I'm very much in favor of that, but I think they should get life in prison where they'll have plenty of time to think about what they did. Of course, there are those who've attacked me and said that I somehow do favor executing the 9/11 criminals, including complicit journalists. That's just not true. I do expect that there will be executions when we get these Nuremberg trials. Those trials are an inevitability. I think it'll happen sometime, certainly within the next 10 years, very possibly within the next few years, depending on how things spin out. But when that happens, I'm certainly not in favor of mass executions for these people, but I am very much in favor of life imprisonment. Unfortunately, people's vindictive nature is such that once the full truth of 9/11 is revealed, I'm sure there will be a very broad and loud hue and cry to bring these people to justice by meeting out the same fate that the Nuremberg criminals received. If that happens, it happens. But I think the death penalty is not a good thing in any circumstance, because it gives the state the ultimate power over life and death, rather like with war. War reaffirms the state as the entity that has the power of life and death over the citizens. It can demand that people sacrifice their lives to the god of the state. This is idolatry. It is evil. Likewise, when the state insists on its right to execute people, it is also insisting on this power as the monopolist of violence, and it's a disgusting kind of thing. It makes the state into a murderous idol. Unfortunately, another terrible thing about the death penalty is that innocent people get executed all the time. Our criminal justice system is terribly flawed. It's really a big show to make people believe that the guilty are punished, and they pretty much just round up the usual suspects and grab a scapegoat when a crime happens. The cops, once they latch onto somebody, they never let them go, no matter what the evidence shows. So we know that there are a great many innocent people being executed. Since DNA testing has come along, that's proven that all sorts of people on death row are innocent of the crimes for which they have been sentenced to death. And one of the people right now who awaits execution in the very near future and who looks like may very well be innocent is a man named Troy Davis. And I currently have on the line Laura Cagle. She She is the death penalty coordinator for Amnesty International in the state of Georgia. She's the co-author of the article, The Pending Execution of Troy Davis, published at counterpunch.org. And it's a pleasure to welcome Laura Cagle, who's doing good work on this issue, and let's hope that it'll succeed. Welcome, Laura. How are you?
Yeah, hi. Thanks. It's the Cagle, Laura Cagle.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should always have to have them ask that.
That's okay.
Way too often. Sorry, Laura. So, Laura, maybe you can fill me in on the details of this Troy Davis case that you've been working on.
Okay, sure. What happened was there was a murder of a police officer in Savannah in 1989. So this case goes way back. And Troy Davis was convicted in 1991 as the shooter of the police officer and received a death sentence in Georgia. And, well, there were a lot of problems and inconsistencies at the trial. There was no physical evidence actually tying Troy Davis to the crime. The murder weapon was never found. So the prosecutors relied on eyewitness testimony. The incident was tied to another incident where a homeless man was harassed and pistol whipped. And some of the witnesses talked about that, and some of them talked about the shooting. But it's evident that no one had really a very clear view of the shooter at the time. It was in a dark parking lot. And there were some inconsistencies in the testimony, but apparently the jury was convinced. But there are a few problems already with the trial, because another man was there at the scene, and he was never really treated as a suspect. He went to the police shortly after the murder, and we don't know what happened then, but for some reason he was not treated as a suspect. He pointed the finger at Troy Davis, and so this other person, his name is Sylvester Coles, he was never put in photo lineups, and no one searched his house for the murder weapon, even though he'd been carrying a gun on the night of the shooting. So that's kind of the basis for what happened at trial. And since the trial, 7 of the 9 state's witnesses have recanted their testimony, and with very credible explanations about how they felt coerced to point the finger at Troy Davis. The whole investigation had focused on him after Sylvester Coles met with him. And of the 2 remaining witnesses, one of them is Sylvester Coles, who obviously is interested in clearing his own name. And the other one can't be found at this time, but what's interesting there is at the time of the shooting, he said he couldn't really tell anything more than the color of the shooter's shirt. And 2 years later at trial, he pointed the finger at Troy Davis and said it was him. So there's really almost no evidence left in this case, and yet Davis was never able to get a retrial on the new evidence. And beyond what I've already stated, 9 people have come forward and implicated the person who should be the other suspect, Sylvester Coles. They know
really?
That they know he had a gun. They know he tried to hide it. And he even boasted to someone that he had shot the police officer and let Troy Davis take the fall for it. So there's a substantial amount of doubt in this case, and yet Davis has not been able to get a new trial.
You know, it's strange, Laura, that the advocates of the death penalty are always claiming that it's possible to be sure of the guilt of these people who are condemned to death. And yet, time after time, we see in these cases that there is all sorts of doubt about the guilt. It seems that the advocates of the death penalty are not, I imagine they're not the first people flocking to Troy Davis's aid by, saying, well, in this case, this guy, there's still some doubt. How do you reconcile this?
Well, actually, I think this is a case that's really galvanized a lot of support across divisions like that. And it's true, there are people who have a knee-jerk reaction and are saying, well, he must have done it. But there have been also supporters of the death penalty who say, this is not, a case for execution, not in any sense. Unfortunately, the victim's family, feeling the need for closure, has really been reluctant to question events. And they've taken a stance, but that's what a lot of people take, which is they think, death row prisoners have a lot of appeals, they have a lot of chances. And I think that's really a misunderstanding of the system.
Right. In this case, it doesn't sound like he's getting very many chances to clear his name. But I'm glad to hear that there are people who are weighing in. What are the last minute avenues for trying to save this guy?
Well, I should explain that July 2007, he already had an execution date. And at that time, the Board of Pardons and Paroles, just 23 hours before his scheduled execution, granted him a 90-day stay. And at that time, the Supreme Court of Georgia decided to take up his motion for a new trial. So we were all very hopeful at that point. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court ruled very closely 4-3 against the new trial, and I can explain more about that. But the ruling came in March, and then because of the Supreme Court case on lethal injection, executions had been suspended. They were started up again recently in Georgia. And Troy Davis got a new scheduled date. He had another clemency hearing. And at that time, the board that had shown a lot of reservations about killing someone, where there was a lot of doubt, and said that they wouldn't go forward if there was doubt in the case, they said at the time of the clemency hearing that it would take a while to make a decision. They met in the morning with Davis's legal team. Then they met with the victim's family. Extremely shortly after that, they issued a denial. So we don't know what happened there. So usually the Board of Pardons and Paroles in Georgia is the sole authority to grant clemency. We don't do it through the governor here.
And so the governor doesn't even have the right to do it?
The governor has no role in clemency in Georgia. So, although I think he can be appealed to as a prominent public figure, and that's not a bad idea, he doesn't actually have the direct authority. But the situation we're in right now, there are two possibilities. The board could reconsider up until the execution time, which is Tuesday at 7. And we're hoping that they will look at the issue again. It's a long shot, but we can always hope because it's such a grave situation, the idea of killing somebody who's possibly innocent in the name of the state.
It's completely crazy. That's just, and you ask yourself, well, why does this happen? Why would there be a case like this where there's such weak evidence, where there's so much room for doubt, and then they would go ahead and want to execute the person? And I guess, Laura, I think there's a sort of a psychology involved in cases such as the murder of police officers. There's this sort of psychology of closure, as you said. The family wants closure, but everybody sort of conspires to want to tell a story that gets resolved, and so they have to cast a villain. And once somebody is cast in that role, the story takes over, and the evidence isn't important. We've seen that in so many cases. The one I've studied the most and best known for is with 9/11. Once that story was told, despite the fact that all the evidence pointed in totally opposite directions from the official story, the story itself just kept going, with this momentum. I think human psychology.
I think you're right. There's definitely an element of that there. And when Troy Davis turned himself in when he found out there was a warrant out for his arrest, and as soon as he turned himself in, there were huge headlines saying he's cop killer, and they publicized his lineup photo so he looked like a hardened criminal, although he was not, and had not had a gun or anything. And from that point on, it was pretty much treated like, okay, we've solved this case. And the witnesses have come forward and have said, that they felt, for various reasons, some of them were very young, some on parole, some were afraid of the police for various reasons, one person couldn't read the affidavit, you know, the what they were signing. So, you know, they were pointed in the direction of saying, it was Troy Davis. Well, let's wrap this case up, you know.
Yeah, it's a wrap. That's the operating, you know, mentality, I think, with in police departments. You know, they want to get their man, and, you know, they latch on. Have you seen the film The Thin Blue Line by Errol Morris?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's
a very
a classic
movie. Yeah.
Right. Where it was really quite clear that this guy was innocent, and the wheels of so-called justice just kept right on grinding him up.
Well, and you see, it's not as unusual as people think. I've heard a number of exonerees speak. Sharif Cousin lives here in Georgia, was in Louisiana on death row as a teenager when we had a juvenile death penalty. And he was at a basketball game, a league basketball game at the time of the murder in a different part of New Orleans. And yet, a case was patched together and there were people wanted the crime solved. And he was the victim of that. He's been exonerated. But, what is that for, you know, someone to have to go through? Troy Davis has been on death row for 17 years. And,
that's pretty cruel and unusual, just having being on death row that long and then having imminent executions come. And you know, that's really a terrible thing to be done to anyone, even if they were guilty.
It's
we'll
very hard on
death.
The family.
Right. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Laura Cogle of the state of Georgia, Amnesty International, the state death penalty coordinator, talking about the pending execution of Troy Davis. Let's hope that we can stop that, and we'll be talking about how to help out with that if there's a way to when we come back. So stick around.
Uncover the Truth with Catherine Albright, live from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Monday to Friday, right here on We the People Radio Network.
This is the Truth Jihad Radio Show. This is your host, Kevin Barrett. I'm talking today about the death penalty with Laura Cogle, the state death penalty coordinator of Amnesty International. And I am definitely concerned about this, against the death penalty. And the first reason is that innocent people do get executed. And this just makes the state out to be some kind of a sacrificial god demanding the blood of people, innocent and guilty alike. It turns the state into a monster, and the state should be kept as minimal as possible. We don't need this kind of sort of primordial bloodlust in our society. It's sick, it's wrong, and especially when somebody who appears to be very, very likely innocent, like Troy Davis, is heading for the executioner's knife or whatever they use. It's just really disturbing. Laura, how did Troy end up in this situation? It's, from what you've said, it sounds like since there was no actual physical evidence against him of any kind, just some witnesses, and we all know witnesses can be coerced, they can be mistaken, and so on. What kind of legal representation did he have that helped him get into this fix?
Well, I don't know all the details of his representation at trial. I wasn't involved in the case at that time. He did have a private attorney, but the family now, views what the lawyer did at the time as very deficient in terms of investigating the case. And that's often what happens with death penalty trials. That's why you often have such miserable outcomes and such a high rate of overturned cases.
Right.
In Georgia, there's an extremely high rate. 80% of the death sentences are reversed due to serious errors. And some of it's just bad lawyering. He now has a pro bono lawyer who, you know, the family was able to get to represent him in the later stages of appeal.
Right. After a lot of the damage had already been done, it appears.
Yeah, the problem is it's hard to reopen a case because there are a lot of procedural barriers, and that's what the Georgia Supreme Court concentrated on last year in denying the trial. Although I should say that the Chief Justice of the Georgia Supreme Court dissented in that opinion, and I'll give you a quote on that. She illustrated exactly what the problem is. She said, "I believe that this case illustrates this court's approach in extraordinary motions for new trials based on new evidence is overly rigid and fails to allow an adequate inquiry into the fundamental question, which is whether or not an innocent person might have been convicted or even, as in this case, might be put to death." So there were people on the court who saw it as very problematic, that concentration on procedural deadlines, you know, was the evidence brought in on time? Two of the affidavits had not been notarized. The court found fault with that. One of the witnesses had said the shooter was left-handed. Troy Davis is right-handed, but the lawyers didn't present proof that he was right-handed. The court got hung up on that. And in general, they're not very open to considering recantations, which is understandable in a certain sense because you need finality in court decisions. But when finality means killing someone, it takes on a whole new scope. And the Georgia courts had never considered a case with this many recantations. In fact, all the precedents going back 100 years, we're only dealing with one recantation.
Right, yeah, yeah. You said it was 7 out of 9 witnesses recanted, and
yeah,
the other
exactly.
One of them is a suspect and the other one can't be reached. I mean, that pretty much means the whole thing has evaporated.
Yeah, that's how I see it. You know, the case against him has been eviscerated, and I think part of the problem is that the prosecutors in Chatham County have been very concerned that there might be a new trial because there's really no conceivable way they could prove their case at this time.
Right.
I think
so
the average
all the more
person,
reason why they... Yeah.
Yeah. The average person, you know, actually believes that if you're going to put someone to death, there's at least some physical evidence that they're tied to the crime at a very minimum.
Right. Well, you know, eyewitness evidence is far less reliable than people think. There have been all sorts of studies done on this, experimental studies, that have found just how plastic people's memory really is. And these studies have shown that, well, for instance, not only is eyewitness testimony far less reliable than people think it is, but also the eyewitnesses who are absolutely convinced that what they're saying is true, that their degree of being convinced that and being sure of themselves has no relation at all, if anything, a slight inverse relation to the veracity of what they're saying. So an eyewitness who's absolutely certain that he's identified somebody as the criminal, if anything, is a little bit less reliable than an eyewitness who's not that certain, and neither of them is very reliable at all in many cases. Eyewitness testimony has to be handled very, very carefully, or it can...
That's exactly right. And Georgia does not have standards on eyewitness identification. The coalition group, Georgians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, is working to promote the adoption of eyewitness ID standards in Georgia. But it's very problematic when you look into it, how things like photo lineups are handled, you know, at what, you know, time and in what way IDs are made and that sort of thing. In fact, we have someone in this case who identified Troy Davis. And she was a little inconsistent in terms of, you know, whether she saw one photo or a photo lineup. But she has said since the trial that she was sure that the shooter was light-skinned and Troy Davis is dark-skinned. There were two black men in question, the other one being the suspect I told you about, who was light-skinned. And she said that at the time she felt uneasy about having identified Davis because he was not light-skinned. And she talked to their lawyer about it, but basically she was told not to change her story because it would look like perjury.
Oh, man.
That's very
terrible.
Disturbing.
Threatening a witness.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of issues here that have not been delved into. Apparently they were not disturbing enough for the parole board to consider clemency, which I find shocking.
Well, the rest of the world looks at this sort of thing that's going on here in the USA, and you know they wonder, just what kind of people we are. Most of the world, the advanced industrial nations at least, have abolished the death penalty decades ago. They see it as a barbarous relic of a pre-civilized era, and yet it's so big here. You know, you work with Amnesty International, which is a human rights group that works on cases all over the globe. But what's your take on the way that our country is losing some of its honor and its good reputation around the world by putting people to death, including possibly innocent people like Troy Davis? Well, I guess you'll have to answer that after the break.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, thanks, Laura. We're speaking with Laura Cockle. She's the death penalty coordinator for Georgia with Amnesty International. And we'll be back to talk some more. If you want to call in, the number here is area code 512-646-1984. That's 512-646-1984. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Truth Jihad Radio Show. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm doing the show today from Mr. Ed's TP Restaurant here in beautiful Tomah, Wisconsin. Mr. Ed being Ed Thompson, the better brother of Tommy Thompson. He's currently the mayor of Tomah. He broke records by breaking into double figures as a Libertarian candidate for governor. We're up here at a Libertarian Party meeting. I'm in Mr. Ed's office, and just thought I'd let you know that. We're talking today with Laura Cockle. She's the state death penalty coordinator for Georgia with Amnesty International. And before the break, I had asked Laura about the international perspective on these death penalty cases in the USA, given that most advanced industrial nations have abolished the death penalty and consider it a barbaric relic. What's your take on that, Laura?
Well, we're definitely getting into the minority. And you know, last year in 2007, only 24 countries in the world carried out executions. 88% of those were in China, Iran, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and the United States, those five countries. So we're not in very good company there, and that should be troubling to us, I think. There's worldwide a trend towards abolition of the death penalty, and the United Nations has supported that by passing a resolution supporting a worldwide moratorium. But the United States often marches to a different drummer, but nonetheless, I believe, you know, there is hope and there is some momentum building in the U.S. I don't know if your listeners are really aware of that. There are 14 states that don't have the death penalty, and most recently New Jersey and New York have abolished it. Maryland and New Mexico are on their way towards abolishing it. And I do believe it will happen in Georgia, and I believe the Troy Davis case will have a tremendous effect. It already has drawn a lot of attention, and really mobilize people to scrutinize the death penalty. And once they scrutinize it, they'll see that there are many, many problems with the way it is applied and the ideas behind it.
Have you gotten a lot of mainstream media publicity?
Yeah, certainly. In fact, yesterday there was an op-ed article in the New York Times and suggesting a very important point that there shouldn't be any rush to execute Troy Davis on Tuesday because he has an application for a stay in with the U.S. Supreme Court, which is, you know, problematic because the court is not in session at this time. And one can't help but feel that there was, you know, some scheming to move up his execution to avoid the possibility of a stay with the court being out of session. So we're really hoping that some attention will be brought to that. We've had all kinds of press coverage. It's just been a tremendous sort of movement across the country. I'm having people write to me from all over the place. And from abroad, there's amazing interest in this case abroad, in France, Italy, England, particularly European countries where the death penalty is considered very barbaric. The Pope has written in favor of commutation. The European Parliament has passed a resolution calling for clemency in this case. So there's been a lot of support. And former President Jimmy Carter has also issued a press release. Bob Barr has also supported re-examination of this case. So
hey, good for Bob.
We're getting support from all corners, from a tremendous number of clergymen, human rights, and civil rights leaders. And, you know, we don't believe that this should be just tossed off as some kind of publicity circus or that sort of thing. It's a real expression of people's concern.
Well, right. It's just so ridiculous to be executing somebody on a case where there's no physical evidence. The only evidence is 9 eyewitnesses, and then 7 of them recant. One is a suspect, and the other one has disappeared. The whole case vanishes, and they're still going to try to execute him. It's crazy. This is exactly the kind of case that should get people up in arms and get people to reexamine the death penalty. The human rights.
It resonates
rhetoric.
With people, and I don't think that should be ignored either. I mean, I think the courts should respond to that, and the board should respond to that. It's not just a play for attention. It's a real outpouring of concern from citizens.
And what can citizens do to express their concern? Is there anything people can do that will actually help his chances?
Well, it's very difficult in these last moments. We are hoping for a stay, at least a temporary stay, and I would keep in mind that if there is a stay, it gives us more time to publicize the case, and we're relying on people all over to talk about it, to get it out in the newspapers, to contact prominent people they know to bring it up. You can find out a lot of information about the case at Amnesty International's website, which is www.amnestyusa.org. And there are some ideas for actions to take that you can automatically online send faxes to the Board of Pardons and Paroles to express your opinion that they should reconsider. And if you type in the Amnesty website address and then / Troy Davis, you'll get directly to those actions. So we're trying to keep people active on this. And should it come to an execution, I'm hoping that there will be protests around the country about it. So if people can contact Amnesty if they have ideas about, you know, actions that they want to take. And they should contact, you know, their leaders in the community, their newspapers, and they should contact the leaders in Georgia and the board about this.
And they should do it fast, because you said that scheduled execution time is Tuesday at 7. Is that 7 a.m. or 7 p.m.?
It's 7 p.m., yes.
Okay. So, yeah, that gives us a little over 48 hours, I guess.
That's the way, yeah. It's very devastating. Should say also that Troy Davis is quite an amazing person. He's always maintained his innocence. And he has a very close relationship with his family, who visits him as often as they can. And keeps in constant contact with him. He has a close, loving relationship with him. And he's a man of deep faith. And he has placed his faith in God, and he sees the importance of his case for the anti-death penalty movement, and he's trying to concentrate on whatever the outcome is, that there will be progress on that front.
Well, it's a very important front, and there is a linkage between this legal death penalty kind of activity and the extrajudicial murders by the state, which have really picked up in recent years. I'm sure you're familiar, Laura, with by way of your association with Amnesty International, that there have been many dozens at minimum of kidnapping victims. They call them detainees, but these are people who have been kidnapped under the color of the state, the United States government, not given any legal rights, and in great many cases tortured. There have been 80,000 such people who have been illegally, extrajudicially kidnapped by forces of the U.S. government because they're Muslim in most cases. And of those people, a high percentage have been tortured, and many, many dozens have been killed extrajudicially in custody. The President of the United States now claims that he has the right to order the kidnapping and torture and execution of anyone he wants in the world, including U.S. citizens, simply by designating them so-called terrorists. And this did happen to Jose Padilla, whose brain was destroyed. His mind was destroyed by years of torture when he was an illegally detained, you know, kidnapping victim. And then they finally did put him on trial after he'd been turned into a human vegetable by torture, gave him a kangaroo court show trial. I think there's a relationship between these horrendous Nazi-style extrajudicial murders and kidnappings and torture and the existence of a legal death penalty in this country. It barbarizes people. It turns people into, you know, unthinking, unfeeling, monstrous, bloodthirsty caricatures of human beings. And then abolishing the death penalty, I think, would be a step towards also changing this current fascist, murderous regime that we've got in Washington, D.C. What do you think, Laura, of the relationship between this death penalty issue and the destruction of the Constitution and the kidnapping of 80,000 people under color of the state? Well, you'll get to think about that over the break, I guess, which is probably a good thing. That's kind of a long question. We'll be back in a bit. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Laura Cogle of the State of Georgia Amnesty International Death Penalty Project. She's the coordinator. We're talking about the pending execution of Troy Davis, and hopefully you can get on board to help stop that. We'll pick it up in a moment. Stick around.
Online and on demand, this is We the People Radio Network.
Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett on the web at barrettforcongress.us. You can go to my issues page and see what I think of the death penalty, or you can just listen to this show. I don't think too much of it. We're talking with Laura Cogle, state death penalty coordinator for Amnesty International in Georgia, talking about the article she wrote for Counterpunch, the pending execution of Troy Davis, and how we only have about 48 hours left, maybe a little over 48 hours, but about that, to help save him so he'll have his chance to go to the Supreme Court. Sounds like there's no real evidence against him. And Laura, just before the break, before we bring up our caller, we do have a caller, and people are, of course, always welcome to call in here, 512-646-1984. I was asking about the connection, if there is one, between judicial executions and extrajudicial kidnapping, extraordinary renditions, torture, and executions, which have become the hallmark of this barbarous administration that's been in power for the last 7 years. Do you think there is a connection there, Laura?
Well, I think, and for me, you know, in this situation, the most important connection is that we need to maintain, within the judicial system, we need to maintain an adequate opportunity for defendants to prove that they're innocent, you know, not prove that they're innocent, they're innocent.
No, they shouldn't have to
guilty,
do that. But, the other way around.
But an adequate chance to defend themselves, because, it just becomes a desperate situation if the courts are not paying adequate attention to the innocence question. And, you know, Amnesty International, of course, supports the international standards that are in place for fair trials, you know, that defendants get access to lawyers and consular officials, that they're not detained for lengthy periods without charges, and so on. And, you know, I think that... what's happening in the Troy Davis case is somewhat different, but the issue is the sort of finality of the sentence. You know, once you've executed someone, you can't go back, you can't change it, and I think that's problematic and deeply problematic. And we have to keep the focus on keeping the judicial process clean and always leaving that opportunity open, because we've had so many cases. We've had 129 exonerations since 1976 from death row alone. You know, of course, there have been exonerations in other types of cases, too. And, of course, there's probably been people who have been executed who were innocent. Some, you know, that's often hard to tell, but there's some very prominent cases where people have doubts. And I think as far as... the extraordinary renditions go, you are facing some similar questions where people aren't getting a fair chance, but it's a very different kind of context. But we need to keep the focus on. I don't think the United States should be so so flip about international law and standards. It's in place for a purpose, and I think it reflects a lot of the values that American citizens believe their government should be following up on.
Well, that's right. People are supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. And with these extraordinary renditions, it appears that the vast majority of people who've been swept up are totally innocent, just in the wrong place at the wrong time, or turned in by somebody for a bounty kind of thing. No care is taken whatsoever to try to actually ascertain if these people are guilty of anything. And, of course, that's because the whole terrorist threat is largely fabricated. The whole thing is a gigantic hoax, and they have to come up with some sort of bogus evidence to justify their hoax, and so they drag in a bunch of innocent people and torture them until they confess to things they never did. Okay, well, let's bring down the first one.
I wouldn't totally agree with you. I mean, I believe terrorism is a real threat, that Al-Qaeda is a real threat, but...
I want to disagree with you there, Laura, because, you know, even if you accept the official version of 9/11, which has been thoroughly disproven, we now know that top U.S. officials were involved in a plot to blow up the World Trade Center, murder 3,000 Americans. There's not one shred of evidence against any of the 19 guys who have been blamed that would stand up in court. The FBI says Bin Laden is specifically not wanted for 9/11 because there's no evidence against him. So clearly this whole thing is a hoax. But even if it were not a hoax, Laura, the number of people killed by terrorism in the past century in the U.S. would be the equivalent of 2 days worth of cigarette fatalities or 29 days worth of automobile deaths. So, you know, whatever attention you pay to terrorism, you need to pay that much attention to cigarettes, you know, every 2 days. So, I mean, the whole notion of scrapping the Constitution and going on to this war footing and everything for 2 days worth of cigarette fatalities, which are, it's bogus anyway, those people were killed by insiders, it's ludicrous. The whole thing is a complete joke and a hoax. But maybe you haven't heard that
really
before. You just got to hear my
name. Yeah, because I might disagree with you on some points, but I think we're in agreement on the point that people should have fair trials, and I'm here to speak about the Troy Davis case. And I believe that the courts have made a sincere effort in some places, but there are procedural problems, and there needs to be more of an opportunity. You know, you can see how these innocence claims get shut out through the procedures as they exist. And there might be some ill will. Might be procedural problems, but there needs to be a mechanism for saving a person's life when there's serious doubts about their case.
Well, we're on the same page there. Let's bring on our caller, Carl from Montreal. Carl is another person suffering from unjust detention. So, Carl, hello. Come on in, Carl.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hey, pretty good.
You know, I'm calling from a government, you know, basically, they listen to the line and can interfere with a call like they do sometimes. But I'm hanging in here. You know, it's been 16 months I've been detained by immigration up here in Canada, and my lawyer has contacted Amnesty International office in Ottawa as well as the one here in Montreal. You know, I totally support, you know, this the efforts in the Troy Davis case, you know. I have my own case in which the government refused to look, you know, at exculpatory evidence and other evidence which was brought forth. I was basically threatened into signing a plea agreement. The Secret Service used fabricated evidence as well as doctored evidence, and the procedural, I guess with the court system, you know, I filed 2255 and appeals in the U.S. District Court, and the court didn't even want to hear
Carl, let's not get too far into the details, but let's give the website so people can catch up on your situation.
Yeah, my website is freecarl.com. That's F-R-E-E, as in free, as in freedom, Carl with a C, C-A-R-L.com.
Okay, yeah. Laura, just for a real brief summary here, Carl published some satirical cartoons about President Bush that were taken as threats by the Secret Service, and this ultimately led to all sorts of trouble for Carl, including this 19 months now of detention in a Canadian immigration prison. We're looking for a country to take Carl. You're willing to seek asylum in any country that will have you at this point, is that right?
Yes. Since this country doesn't seem to be very sympathetic and doesn't seem to be willing to be interested in the facts in my case that my lawyer has presented. So I'm looking for any country that is willing to accept me, you know.
Okay, well, I sure wish you luck with that, and I'll try and help out however I can. Thanks, Carl. It's always good to hear from you. And people can go to freecarl, was it .com or .org?
.com. Yeah, and not all of the 30 drawings or cartoons. There's some of them on the website, and some of the court documents are also been uploaded on the website as PDF documents, as format. So
okay.
Look at some of the court documents. Okay.
Okay, well, thanks, Carl. It's always great to hear from you. Take care, huh?
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, Laura, you know that there are all sorts of people in these kind of situations. Carl is just lucky enough to be locked up unjustly where there's a phone so he can call into radio shows, and we're trying to help him in his quest to get out. He's never been convicted of anything here. It's, you know, 19 months in immigration detention because the Secret Service doesn't like his satirical cartoons about Bush.
Mm-hmm.
If people are going to help out with the Troy Davis case, once again, give us that Amnesty International website.
The website is www.amnestyusa.org, and if you put /Troy Davis, you'll get directly to the information about the case, and there's all kinds of information on there. Amnesty did a long report on the case. There's information about the family and about the background of the case, and you can even read quotes from people who have recanted and people who have implicated another suspect in the case, and that's quite fascinating to find out more about the case. And at this late point, we're asking people to fax the Board of Pardons and Paroles, to contact media and draw attention to the case as they can.
Okay, they could get that fax number through the website?
Yes, it's a direct online action.
Okay, well, I wish you luck and Godspeed, and I will be praying for Troy Davis over the next couple of days.
Exactly, we'll hope for the best.
Okay, well, thank you, Laura. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for the important work that you're doing. Keep it up.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, take care. Bye. That's Laura Cogle, the Death Penalty Coordinator for Amnesty International in Georgia, talking about Troy Davis. Next hour, we'll be back with Dave Lindorf of thiscan'tbehappening.com or whatever it is. Dave's a great guy. It'll be a great conversation, so stay tuned here, right here at Truth Jihad Radio.